Nixon's second inauguration was met with much protest. As his limousine moved down Pennsylvania Avenue, it was hit with eggs, tomatoes, and other objects. There were also other protest activities throughout the Capitol that day, as we will hear in this report from Pacifica Radio.
One of the Yippies' plans today was to inaugurate as president a rat with the face of Richard Nixon. They had such a rat, a 30-foot float to be exact, but the police took it away from them. A member of the Yippies described it.
The police surrounded us, and they took the float. They brought a truck, and they took it, and they put it on a flatbed truck while the People's Rat Band played such songs as the Mickey Mouse March, and Hail to the Chief. And when they finally loaded up onto their van, we played Taps, of course, because they took our rat, and we chanted, the pigs got the rat, you know. But after that, they drove off in this flatbed truck, and the flatbed truck got stuck in the traffic 2 blocks down the street, and we ran down after it and took the rat off the truck again and liberated it from the cops, and we were running down the street with it, you know, and we had it up above our heads, you know, we were carrying it. And then they ran us down with their scooters and stopped us. And then they seized the rat again. And the rat has been taken as a violation of our right to have a float in this affair.
A member of the Yippies describing their activities at Nixon's second inauguration. Although there was much protest activity all along the presidential parade, most demonstrators rallied at the Washington Monument, where they heard several speakers, including then-Congresswoman from New York, Bella Abzug.
Mr. Nixon must have fought that after a war in which 1.5 million people have been killed, 3 million wounded, and 7 millions of tons of bombs dropped, that nobody would get excited when he ordered another million or so tons of bombs dropped in the most concentrated exhibition of savagery in the history of the world. Well, he is wrong. He is wrong because our protest is not a lonely protest. It's deep and it's wide. America's allies have been bombarding Washington with messages of condemnation. Australian longshoremen declared a boycott of American goods. Heads of governments have expressed their outrage, from the Pope, from the head of the United Nations, from Captain Michael Heck, who found his conscience and refused to fly any more B-52s. Supposed to stand up and cheer while Richard Nixon takes the oath of office and pledge, even as he is violating it by his actions? What are we supposed to unite around? The president's shameful 4-year record of lying about the war and botching and bungling a settlement? His devotion to the two regimes? The baby Rebozo and the Washington Redskins? Or maybe the Watergate scandal. Those of us standing here between the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial represent the soul of American democracy. Our protest here is the true reaffirmation of America's ideals and promises. The right to dissent, the right to free speech and a free press, the right to assembly, and we will be here symbolically and actually and all over this country until this war is ended, until the commitment of our energies and resources are put to all of the people in this country. And that is the true inauguration of our beliefs and our country here today.
Congresswoman Bella Abzug, speaking at the Nixon inauguration protest rally at the Washington Monument.
You know we're wrong. You know we're wrong. We're in the war and we don't belong. Pack up our guns and come on home and stop the fire, the napalm. Stop the fire, the napalm. You wonder how you can be affected. Your schools and hospitals go neglected. It's for freedom for the Vietnamese we claim. The same freedom that the Indian gained. You know we're wrong, you know we're wrong. We're
we're in the war and we don't belong. Pack up our smallpox blankets and come on home. And stop the fire, napalm. Stop the fire, napalm.
Good evening. I have asked for this radio and television time tonight for the purpose of announcing that we today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam and in Southeast Asia.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
The following statement is being issued at this moment in Washington and Hanoi. At 12:30 Paris time today, January 23, 1973, the agreement on ending the war and restoring peace in Vietnam was initialed by Dr. Henry Kissinger on behalf of the United States and Special Advisor Lee Duc Tho on behalf of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. The agreement will be formally signed by the parties participating in the Paris Conference on Vietnam on January 27, 1973 at the International Conference Center in Paris. The ceasefire will take effect at 2400 Greenwich Mean Time, January 27, 1973. The United States and the Democratic Republic of Vietnam express the hope that this agreement will ensure stable peace in Vietnam and contribute to the preservation of lasting peace in Indochina and Southeast Asia. That concludes the formal statement. Throughout the years of negotiations, we have insisted on peace with honor. In my addresses to the nation from this room of January 25th and May 8th, I set forth the goals that we considered essential for peace with honor. In the settlement that has now been agreed to, all the conditions that I laid down then have been met. A ceasefire, internationally supervised, will begin at 7 p.m. this Saturday, January 27, Washington time. Within 60 days from this Saturday, all Americans held prisoners of war throughout Indochina will be released. There will be the fullest possible accounting of all those who remain. The people of South Vietnam have been guaranteed the right to determine their own future without outside interference. The important thing was not to talk about peace, but to get peace, and to get the right kind of peace. This we have done. Now that we have achieved an honorable agreement, let us be proud of the 2.5 million young Americans who served in Vietnam, who served with honor and distinction in one of the most selfless enterprises in the history of nations. Let us consecrate this moment by resolving together to make the peace we have achieved a peace that will last. Thank you, and good evening.
Silent soldiers on a silver screen, framed in fantasies and drugged in dreams, unpaid actors of the mystery. The mad director knows that freedom will not make you free. And what's this got to do with me? Country in her suicide. Find a flag so you can wave goodbye. But just before the end, even treason. prison might be worth a try. This country is too young to die.
Some say it's yellow, some say red. It will not matter when we're dead. How many dead men will it take to build a dike that will not break? How many children must we kill before we make
John Baez with Saigon Bride. Before that, Phil Oakes and Richard Nixon both declaring the war was over, in their own styles. Unfortunately, neither declaration held true at the time. Throughout the war years, Paul Fisher, a reporter with Pacifica Radio in New York City, produced a nightly news program called The War Summary. We will now hear an excerpt of his program from January 29, 1973, the day the alleged ceasefire was to take effect.
Good evening. There's still a war summary tonight because there's still a war, and much of the program tonight is devoted to the ceasefire and the fact that there isn't much of a ceasefire to speak of. Since the war officially ended Sunday Saigon time, the combat has only intensified. The parties have accused each other of hundreds of violations, and it's estimated that since the war supposedly ended, some 2,000 troops, 800 Saigon troops, and another 1,000 guerrillas have died in combat. And as always, this doesn't include the civilians caught in the middle of it. At this hour, the fighting continues, and it isn't even totally over for the Americans either, who are still bombing Laos today. There's no International Control Commission to speak of. It isn't that the delegates from the four-member nations aren't there yet, though in fact not all the ICC members have arrived in Saigon. But even those that have arrived can't do anything, because the ICC can only investigate violations on the basis of complaints from the Mixed Military Commission. And the Mixed Military Commission is too busy fighting about the procedure for allowing its own members into the country. That is, Saigon is demanding that Hanoi and the PRG delegates sign immigration forms when they arrive in Saigon. The Hanoi and PRG delegates say that to do so would imply recognition of the Saigon government. Anyway, the Military Commission is so busy with that, it hasn't had the time or inclination to report any violations to the ICC. So the ICC members are cooling their heels in Saigon, as the ceasefire is being blatantly violated all across South Vietnam. As such, the only people acting as observers are reporters and the refugees from whatever village or territory is being fought over at the time. To be sure, reporters have been hampered and in some cases arrested so that ceasefire violations won't be reported in detail, but there are so many violations that the reports are leaking through anyway from sheer volume. In short, reporters who left Saigon yesterday, thinking they would go out and cover the ceasefire in the countryside, instead found themselves covering the war again today. And so, this is Paul Fisher with the Monday Night War Summary. Vice President Agnew arrives in Saigon Tuesday on an official visit to South Vietnam. Some say he's been sent to symbolize continued American support for Saigon, but according to AFP correspondent Felix Bolo, whatever the reason for his coming, Agnew will quickly find that the war, instead of being ended by the ceasefire, has intensified. Some people are even saying that the third Vietnamese war has begun. That's probably premature, says Bolo. But military communiques leave no doubt that the fighting is extremely heavy. The only difference between the period preceding the official ceasefire and the hours that have succeeded it is that military actions are reported as violations now instead of attacks. Government military operations, for example, are being justified continuously by Saigon Radio. It's been saying that government forces are only ensuring supervision of the ceasefire without relying on the control commission. But for Saigon, according to the AFP correspondent, on-the-spot supervision means that, quote, communists have no right to the zones under our control. The communists, says Saigon Radio, are only permitted to live in the jungle, and if they move around in our zones, they are to be killed on the spot. Accordingly, what it boils down to, says correspondent Bolo, is that an on-the-spot ceasefire means that the guerrillas must be killed on the spot. In many of South Vietnam's provinces, there are no demarcation lines delineating government and guerrilla zones of control, and the battles continue today in those areas. And that isn't to say that the fighting has stopped in areas where there are demarcation lines, because the fact is it hasn't. Anyway, many of the violations that did get reported today were in the Saigon region. AFP correspondent Roland Pierre Paringo spent the day at Tram Vang village, which had somehow survived the war, but did not survive the ceasefire. Early this morning, correspondent Paringo watched as hundreds of villagers went through the smoking ruins of Tram Vang in vain search of their possessions. The village, located about 40 miles north of Saigon on Strategic Highway 1, was heavily damaged after a post-ceasefire battle. At least 100 houses were burned down and dozens of others were damaged. According to Paringo, everyone at Tram Vang agreed that the guerrillas arrived on the outskirts of the village before the ceasefire took effect, and that fighting broke out and continued all day yesterday in spite of the 8 a.m. ceasefire. The villagers said South Vietnamese warplanes did not bomb the village, but the Saigon forces, they said, did use helicopter gunships, spraying rocket and machine gun fire into houses where the guerrillas were thought to be holed up. According to the AFP correspondent, South Vietnamese authorities denied using helicopter gunships on Tram Vang, but furnished no explanation as to how all those bullet holes came to rest on so many rooftops. In any event, for the residents of Tram Vang, the question of who violated the ceasefire first didn't matter much, as they sifted through the ruins looking for food and belongings, and the same could be said for other villages in the sector which had gone through the same thing. In general, according to Paringo, the on-the-spot ceasefire on that portion of Highway 1 was clearly not respected, as soldiers from both camps found themselves in the same place at the same time. As for North Vietnam, the city of Hanoi celebrated the first night of peace last night since June of 1964, when President Johnson first began bombing it. According to AFP correspondent Jean Leclerc de Sablon, the city was lit up as it hadn't been ever since then, with tens of thousands of red flags decorating the streets and children throwing firecrackers and laughing. Adults were more restrained than that, though. Amid the damage caused by American B-52s last month, people were preparing for the Flower Festival of Tet without exuberance. Many people, still shaken by the recent bombing, said they believed that outright celebrations were simply unbecoming. There were convoys of trucks moving through Hanoi. They normally carry ammunition. But according to correspondent de Sablon, today they were carrying passengers and musicians and special editions of newspapers about the ceasefire. Already, the reconstruction work is underway in the ruins. Shops have reopened under bamboo shelters, and a barber was working under a canvas rooftop spread over a pile of bricks. That from AFP correspondent Jean Leclerc de Sablon. In Los Angeles, a portion of the Pentagon papers dealing with attempts to end the war, which was never revealed before, was partly disclosed today. The section made public revealed that former U.S. Ambassador to Saigon, Henry Cabot Lodge, proposed bombing North Vietnam in 1964, but said it should stop short of totally annihilating the North because he said it would bring the Chinese into the war. And that's the Monday Night War Summary. I'll be back tomorrow with the Tuesday Night War Summary. This is Paul Fisher. Good night.
And the war drags on. They're just there to try and make the people free. But the way that they're doing it, it don't seem like that to me. Just more bloodletting and misery and tears that this poor country's known for the last 20 years. And the war
Mitchell, Eddie Cox, Eisenhower,
and the war dragged on. Oddly enough, it was not the atrocities of Vietnam that brought down Nixon, but rather a clumsy bugging attempt at the Democratic National Headquarters at the Watergate complex. It took a while for momentum to build to connect Nixon with Watergate, but one can say it started in the spring of 73, when Phillips pointed the finger at Nixon live on New York radio.
The other point is that nobody seems to have said it, but it's so obvious, but I, for one, believe that Nixon obviously was the man behind Watergate. He's the guy that planned the whole thing with the boys. I hereby accuse Richard Nixon of being the man behind Watergate. This is, I guess, the first time in media this has been said. President Nixon was the guy that planned Watergate. I hereby would like to start a little movement here in New York City. As you know from previous demonstrations, word of mouth can do a lot of things. Let's start a movement now to impeach Richard Nixon. Just spread the word around. Just tell everybody you know. Call up your pals on the West Coast and just get the word out, because the media will be too chicken. So, well, the mere fact of impeaching President Nixon will be a blow to the government that will be far more important than whether Agnew's in there or not, because Nixon and Agnew are the same people. They're both going to be.
Let us think about the policies of President Agnew. Think it through.
This is William F. Buckley, Jr., and welcome to our show. Our guest tonight is the Honorable Spiro T. Agnew. Mr. Vice President, if through some quirk of history, Rich Nixon felt compelled to resign, that would make Spiro T. Agnew the President of the United States. Have you prepared yourself for that eventuality?
Mr. Nixon's only mistake was putting too much faith in some overzealous White House aides. I believe in Richard Milhouse Nixon, and I think the country does too.
Oh, boy, just think of it. President Agnew. President Agnew. That'll show all those guys back in high school who used to tease me with Spiro, Spiro is a zero. With a name like that, he must be a queero.
Spiro stepped out on the doorstep. He spoke like he had something to say. He said, I don't want to hear anybody. I guess he's going to be that way.
Yes, nobody wanted to be near Spiro, let alone entertain the thoughts of the policies of President Agnew. News reporters of the mass media, which became commonly known as the fourth branch of government during the Watergate scandal, disclosed that Agnew had failed to pay his income tax in previous years. Spiro pleaded no contest to the charges and resigned. With Agnew out of the way, pressures began to mount on the big cheese in the Oval Office.
Let me just say this. I made my mistakes. But in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
This is a song about G. Gordon Liddy, Watergate bagman and law and order fanatic, who recently gave himself a new middle name. He called himself Bowers. Now, he used to work for the Dick Nixon gang, but he's now retired and living on a 6 to 30 year pension at the federal penitentiary in Danbury, Connecticut. Hunt asked Gordon Liddy, don't you think it's pretty risky if we implement your plan? Gordon turned to Howard, said, don't be a coward. I've seen John, and John thinks that it's grand. John said, Gordon, I'm not sure we can afford it, but it's great even though it's kind of wild. We'll scrap the floating whorehouse, keep the listening dormouse. Dick will love it, I'm sure it's just his style. Gordon, Gordon, battle lit. We're so proud of what you did. You blew the cover off the plovers, gave us daytime TV for the summer. We're so proud of what you did. Richard Nixon, I think I can fix it. Gordon's cool, he's right enough for me. Let him talk to Mitchell, if they're pinched, he'll get them out in no time for a modest fee. So Gordon went ahead, he found some Cuban friends who hated Castro for the CIA. He sent them to Watergate with Barker and some masking tape to stop them commies. This was the only way.
Hi there, I'm Mrs. Hunt. I've come to fix things up. Where's the drop?
Jeez, a lady plumber. What'll Combat think of next? Hey, what's in your bag?
It's new green money laundered in Mexico. It'll help keep even these old Washington things from leaking.
Oh, yeah? Well, what's wrong with my brand of lettuce? It looks good enough to me.
Well, let's have a look. Ring around the dollar, ring around the dollar.
Holy baloney, my money's dirty.
It sure is. You see, Tony, many kinds of improperly laundered funds leave embarrassing telltale traces in bank records and can cause permanent stains on reputations.
No kidding.
But Mexican funds with secret ingredient ITT keep the White House clean while they prevent the dirt from getting out.
Wow.
All it takes is just a few $100,000 a month, and you can cover up even the worst mess. And thanks to its illegal political action, Mexican money goes to work where it counts, removing all evidence of crime, greased palms, and dirty tricks in those hard-to-get-at high places.
Boy, that Mex cabbage sure sounds terrific.
Use laundered Mexican money. It really pays off.
Get it so white.
Final touch, Grandma.
Ecological meeting.
Well, here's to the land you've torn out the heart of. Richard Nixon, find yourself another country to be part of.
Who's the one who can restore respect for law in this country?
Well, I'm not a crook.
Nixon's the one.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list.
Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world.
This is the voice of Vietnam, broadcasting from Hanoi.
The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
And everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned.
It's a perfect day for impeachment activities here in our nation's capital, where together with dozens and dozens of our fellow Americans, Barbara and I are on hand for this history-making event. What do you say, Barbara?
Well, it certainly is, Wallace. The skies are gray and overcast, the trees are bare, and the birds are wheezing.
Thank you. That'll be all, Barbara. And, of course, there is a slight drizzle falling here on Pennsylvania Avenue, but as someone remarked earlier, a few more drips won't even be noticed in this town. Isn't that right, Barbara?
Yes, Wallace, it certainly is.
Okay, thank you again, Barbara. And, of course, I see the Impeachment Day parade is getting underway now. And yes, with the march past of the states. And here they come now, and some of these floats certainly are breathtaking, aren't they? Here's Alabama. And now there's a most unusual one, wouldn't you say, Barbara?
Yes, Wallace. It looks like an enormous pile of broken machinery that seems to be backfiring from time to time.
Right you are, Barbara. And of course, that's the Southern Strategy float.
Certainly one of the most expensive floats in this parade, and quite a personal tribute to Mr. Nixon.
As the states continue to pass by and review, I notice that Massachusetts seems to be Well, it seems to be out of step.
No, Wallace. I think if you look closely, you'll see that all the other states are out of step. Massachusetts seems to be marching to a different drummer.
Okay, very clever, Barb.
National Lampoon's Impeachment Parade from their album The Missing White House Tapes, with a reference to the 1972 presidential election in which Richard Nixon won 49 of the 50 states. Democratic candidate George McGovern was victorious only in Massachusetts. We're in the home stretch of the Nixon years, a personal retrospective. Up next, Scoop's last news show with Kicking the Dick Around.
As the great Tibetan yogi Milarepa said, happy is it to practice the yoga of renouncing one's own country.
Tyrant, dictator, he's lost his senses, he should resign, he should be impeached.
Rosemary, erase that.
Committee will come to all of them. Don't get the impression that you arouse my anger.
You see, I have that impression.
You see, one can only be angry with those he respects.
I'm getting awfully sick away down deep inside at these innuendos.
What did the president know? And when did he know it?
Mr. Butterfield, are you aware of the installation of any listening devices in the Oval Office of the President?
I was aware of listening devices. Yes, sir.
Well, it was quite a queer coincidence, wasn't it? It's rather a suspicious coincidence.
I then said that to pay clemency was wrong.
That is correct, Senator. That is correct.
Correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
It's a great trial they're conducting up here, isn't it?
And I can assure you that you don't need to worry about my getting seasick or jumping ship. I'm going to stay on that helm till we bring it into port.
I'm quite certain that that is my... My best recollection is
I do not recall as perjury, electronic surveillance without the so-called Houston Clan, which
prosecution of Dr. Ellsworth, breaking and entering.
The best of my recollection, I met with political matters memorandum.
What a liar.
I then said that to pay clemency was wrong.
What is the expression of stonewalling it?
In fact, I think I can put it correctly. I said it is wrong. That's for sure.
And I know he's a very, very clever little lawyer. If he wants to try and tell the American people,
I've burned everything I've got.
Raise his right hand. Go down here in the witness stand and tell us.
Nixon is the one.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Not guilty, of course.
And that's the way it is.
Red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.
As I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missed. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I have never been a quitter. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow by taking this action.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first.
I'm a Ford, not a Lincoln.
It's the Watergate story and it's sure a story, and they said he'd have no fear, for a commander-in-chief to become a thief could never happen here. It's a story we might never know, except for one small thing. They said we ought save every thought of Richard M. the King. Now you might not be too thrilled to find Big Brother watching you, so if you care, he makes it fair and bugs his own place too. It's the Watergate story, and it sure is gory, and now we know the score. When the commander-in-chief turns out to be a thief, it must be 1984.
A personal reflection of the Nixon years was written, mixed, and edited by your host, Chuck Rosina. Special thanks to Scoop and the Radio Rebels of San Francisco, Danny Schechter, the News Dissector, and to the ideals that Pacifica Radio once held high. Closing song, The Watergate Story, is by Dan Murphy from his Outpost CD. This program was produced by Chuck Yu at the WBLOQ Production Studio in Jamaica Plain, Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Thanks for listening.
You can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. Abe Lincoln said that. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. John Mitchell said that. I am not a crook. Richard Nixon said that. It's the Watergate story, and it sure is gory, and we must without a doubt. When a commander-in-chief turns out to be a thief, just throw the rascal out.